Welcome to the C3 Church Global Podcast with Phil Pringle. Phil is the founder and senior leader of C3 Church Global, a family of over 500 churches around the world. We're passionate about bringing you fresh, inspiring devotionals to fuel your day and insightful conversations on all things church and leadership. And it all starts right now.
Hi, everybody. Welcome again to our C3 Church Global Podcast. What a pleasure to have Phil Cook, media extraordinaire, great ambassador for Christ in the media. It's great to have you with us, Phil.
I'm thrilled to be here. This is my second time on your program. So we always have fun when we're together. So this will be good.
I think you're the first guy I've had twice.
Well, I'm honored. That puts me in some special high altitude here. That's pretty cool. I'm impressed.
Well, you're prolific. You've written another book. And the last time we were talking, we were talking about a book you'd written that I'd read and found extremely inspiring and helpful and informative. And now you've written another one, Ideas on a Deadline.
Yeah, it's called Ideas on a Deadline, How to Be Creative When the Clock is Ticking. It's a little different. There's a lot of books on creativity out there, but I realized that there wasn't much out there on how to be creative when the pressure is on. You know, so many of us. And here's the thing. You're incredibly creative. You're an artist. You've not only been, you know, a professional creative, if you will, but you've inspired a generation of people to be more creative. But you don't have to be in a creative job to benefit from this. You could be an executive, a teacher, a real estate person, a coach, whatever, because we all have to deliver projects on a deadline. You know, we all have things, products, projects, ideas that we have to deliver at a certain time. And I find so many people just don't know how to do it. Either they're afraid or they assume that they just need to wait until this brilliant aha moment happens. And the truth is, we can have brilliant breakthrough ideas when we need them most. There's some techniques, some ideas that I've gone through in the book, some research that's out there that really opens us up to be able to get ideas the moment we need them. And that's really, in this fast-paced, distracted world we live in, we need those ideas pretty quick these days. So that was really behind the reason behind why I wrote the book.
I saw one point in there where it said you were trying to pull apart the belief that because of the deadline, we can't be creative. We got to get it from somewhere else, or we've got to come up with some shallow idea that really doesn't make the mark, but we're going to make it pass because of the time schedule. So knocking that idea down is a very good idea, because we should be able to dwell deep and plumb some richness in our own soul. But also through collaboration, I think we can find some pretty good answers.
Absolutely. Novelist Jack London said, I don't wait for inspiration. I go after it with a club. And I think that, you know, if you're professional, I was partners in a company that produced Super Bowl commercials for a while. And I learned pretty quick that they're not going to postpone the Super Bowl event because I can't come up with a good enough idea for a commercial. And one thing you've discovered as a pastor is Sundays show up on a relentless schedule every week. You know, they just are relentless and they keep coming, and you have to be ready with your message. And I've been involved in television all my life, and television networks don't change the date of a new show, because I don't have a good enough idea or a script finished. So professionals understand that there's some things you can do to trigger brilliant ideas. And rather than just wait, I love the quote by artist Chuck Close, who said, inspiration is for amateurs. The rest of us just show up and get to work. And that's really, really true.
There you go. I love that. I listened to an interview with Stuart Copeland recently, who used to be part of The Police, which is a band that Sting was in. And then he got enlisted by a few movie producers, and ended up needing to produce a music score at least once a week for this TV series that was coming out. And he said it was unbelievable. You'd be watching the video and you had to think of music that would go with the video to amplify the drama, to elongate the feelings, everything. And he said, you're on that clock. You had to be creative and come up with, and you never think of that when you're watching a TV series, that these guys, but then there are some that are every night.
Yeah.
And you've got to be coming up with something fresh and new. It's not like the news where they're going to be playing their theme music. This is brand new music every day. And it's there. It's a gifting that all of us have got if we just, I think, make the time and the space to actually discover that gift and pull it out and put it out on paper or music score or whatever.
I'll tell you what's really was significant to me in my research for the book. I discovered that, first of all, you know, when I go to a conference or an event somewhere around the world and speak on creativity, I always get a certain number of people that will come up to me and say, "Well, that's nice, Phil, but you know, I'm just not born creative. I'm never a creative person." Well, let me tell you, there is not one bit of research that indicates some people are born creative and others aren't. Everybody is born creative. In fact, get a bunch of little kids in a room, get a bunch of toddlers in a room, they're all wildly creative. And so I think we need to put to bed this idea that some of us are born to be accountants, and some of us are born to be attorneys, and some of us are born to be creative. We're all born creative, but it's a muscle. And if we don't use that muscle, we're going to lose it. And so I just want to make sure every listener knows today that no matter what you do for a living, no matter what your background, you can be more creative. And in a book like this, Ideas on a Deadline, will help amp up that creativity and get it back in your life, because it's so important.
And it is. It's super important in a world of robots and automation. Yes. The one thing that no robot or automated process is going to ever be able to do is splash their soul across a canvas, because they don't have a soul, and or splash their soul across a movie screen, because that creativity, exactly what you're saying, I couldn't agree more. And it's essential. It's not even optional. It's imperative that all humans tap into that creative well on the inside of them, because it is therapeutic.
Yeah.
It is part of our wellness. It is part of our meaningfulness to actually tap into that creativity. And if we don't, there's a frustration aching on the inside of everybody's inner person trying to discover that piece of the image of God, who is the ultimate creator, but it's in all of us, just like you say, to let it out. And I think it's important for our health, for our wholeness.
I think that's an important comment about God. You know, it's so interesting to me that, as you know, as a pastor, God has many, many attributes, but he chose to introduce himself in the very first verse of the Bible as a creator. He could have chosen to introduce him in a number of ways, himself in a number of ways, but he chose to introduce himself as a creator, and we are made in his image. And I just think that we don't tap into that. We don't understand it. And let me take it a step further, Phil, and say that we don't lose our creativity as we get older. You know, so many people think as we get older, we're not going to be as creative. I visit churches and I visit nonprofits, and I look at the leadership team, and I see that it's mostly young people. And I think it's great to tap into young people and get their genius and their brilliance. However, I hate to see it when older people step back and assume, okay, I'm not going to be as creative anymore. Again, there's no shred of evidence that indicates older people are less creative. Now, there is some indication that we approach creativity in a different way as we get older. We change the way our perspective on creativity, but there are brilliant artists, graphic designers, writers, musicians, very productive in their 70s, 80s, even 90s. So this idea that because you're older, you're not as creative as the younger crowd is a complete myth. It's a total myth. And so I think if there are people out there that if they don't listen to anything else we say today, that's a word for them that, you know what, it's time to step back into the game. Your creativity has not gone away. Now, that's predicated on the fact that you need to be reading, you need to be studying, you need to be involved in culture, you need to see what's going on and be aware of what's happening. As long as you're not, you know, staying in bed watching TV all day long as you're out there active, learning, growing, you can be as creative as you want to for as long as you want.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. This is such an important conversation, because you look at, I remember when I first started seeing guys like Mick Jagger,
yep,
Paul McCartney, these older guys who once were our heroes as young kids, but now they're still functioning, still doing wine festivals and concerts, and they're sold out.
Yeah.
It is impressive. Michelangelo was 95, I think, when he painted the Sistine Chapel ceiling. Lying upside down, painting that ceiling with his assistants. Mama Moses got going at 85 as an artist. Smith Wigglesworth, the great evangelist, Pentecostal evangelist, he only got going at 65. He came back to the Lord, and he changed the world.
That's right.
There's no doubt about it. He became part of the foundation of so many things in the Christian church today. So what you're saying is too true, that creative streak inside every one of us, the fountain of creativity, it doesn't die, and we should not let anybody dismiss us because our creativity is not like the rest of the world. I mean, would you have signed Bob Dylan, Phil, when he came to you? Would you have signed him? Would you put money onto Bob and said, yeah, I love this guy's voice. He's just like Frank Sinatra.
That's exactly right. And we all express creativity in different ways. The Beatles got turned down multiple times. I it's amazing. If you look at the list of artists out there and writers and thinkers, the people that got rejected and how many times they got rejected and they went on to be remarkable artists is really amazing. And that happens in business all the time. I mean, how many business leaders have been turned down with their great idea for their company? And so I just think that persistence matters, commitment matters. We can be as creative as we want to be as long as we're dedicated to it and as long as we take it seriously. I just think that's a word for people listening out there today. That idea that you think, man, some people have told me I'm crazy, could end up being the idea that changes the world. You just never know. You just have to stay persistent and keep out there and keep in the game and keep pitching it because you just never know the future.
Yeah, courage is a big part of it, isn't it? You know, to have another go, to be persistent.
Yeah.
To, like you say, to have resilience, because in the journey of a dream, the anatomy of opportunity is that there's failure in the picture. And sometimes, I'm tempted to say all the time, the failure is more common and often than the successes. I know I've had way more failures in the journey than successes, but the successes are what everybody loves to talk about.
True.
And you forget and people ignore. And sometimes even the people who've been successful, they're not being totally honest about the times when it was a disaster, when it was a complete mess. And it's easy to forget when you are successful, those years of pain and failure. But the fact that you kept on courageously having another shot, and there are plenty of artists in that zone. I think Van Gogh didn't sell any paintings to anybody else other than his brother, who bought them out of sympathy during his lifetime.
And if that's right,
he was around today, he would not even begin to believe the prices that are on his paintings, the thousands of people every day who go through museums with his art in it or images of his art. And it is astonishing what somebody with just a bit of courage and resilience will get up and go again with their creativity. And so I'd like to encourage anybody listening today, don't be totally discouraged just because of one or two missteps or pushbacks. Ask some friends, help them give you some feedback, and back on the saddle and back into the game.
Well, you know, you bring up a good point, and that is fear holds a lot of people back. There's no question about it. And I have a chapter in the book about fear and how to overcome your fear of creative projects and ideas, because it really does restrain people and keep them from achieving amazing things. And a couple of the things that I suggest in the book is, first of all, if you're afraid of making a deadline, if you're afraid of delivering on a project, if you're afraid of making that presentation or whatever project you're doing, you know, number one, make your fear public. Let people know. when you get it out there and talk to people about it, suddenly it starts to lose its power and they want to come alongside you and help. Now, certainly there may be somebody in your workplace that wants to undermine you, but the truth is most people you're working with, most people that surround you, they want to help. And so by voicing that fear, that helps you express it a little bit and it helps get rid of it. Another powerful tool is knowledge. The more you learn, the less fearful you will be. I had a friend who was so terrified of the water. She was just horrified of the water. So she took a scuba diving class. And once she went through the class and started learning about it, and then she got into a pool and started practicing, suddenly that fear completely left her. I have another friend that was afraid of flying in an airplane, so he took a skydiving lesson. And, you know, it's just the knowledge. Once they realized, okay, I get what this is all about, that fear just went away. So just making it public, talking a little bit about it, sharing with a friend, and then learning about it. Whatever area you're afraid of, there's some interesting research that indicates people who are terrified of snakes can actually get over that to the point where they will cuddle with snakes. They'll hold snakes in their hand by just, you know, learning about them, finding out what the truth is about snakes, getting a little closer and a little closer under supervision. And so there's a way, the more you learn, the less you're afraid of things. So I, just like you said, I encourage people, don't let fear hold you back, because there's a way around that fear that if you'll discover that if you overcome this kind of things, there's no limit to what you're capable of.
I love it. And I think that some people think the dream that they have might be too complex or too big. Like for me, I would love to make a movie one day, but I think I'm just way too busy. I've got all sorts of things. So Phil, help me here. How do you start in the movie making? Because this is your expertise. If I ever had a chance to talk to anybody about how do you get started? So my thought is start by making a 1 minute movie. And then move on maybe to a 5 minute movie. And then, you know, like as time passes and you develop skills and ideas and you know how to manage the whole process, maybe go for a 10 minute thing. Give me some ideas. If there are any young filmmakers out there, what would their first steps be?
You're exactly right. My greatest regret in my career in filmmaking is that I didn't start sooner making my own stuff. Now, granted, I'm an old guy, and when I started, cameras cost $250,000. We didn't carry a studio in our pocket called an iPhone. But now, there's no reason you couldn't start to go make a film by yourself. I actually met a woman recently here in Hollywood. She's a director of photography, and everything she shoots is on an iPhone. She's got this elaborate handheld rig that she's created for it, but she shoots everything on an iPhone. In fact, there are two film festivals in the United States today just for movies, feature-length films shot on iPhones. So there's no excuse anymore. It used to be, hey, I needed to find a bunch of money. I needed to find a sponsor. I needed to find a studio. No. In fact, my daughter Kelsey and her husband Chris just produced a movie called Reopening. They shot it during COVID when everything was shut down. They shot a movie. It's a mockumentary. You remember Spinal Tap and Best in Show and those classic kind of fake documentary films with Christopher Guest. They did a mockumentary called Reopening on a small community theater in the mountains of Tennessee reopening after after the COVID pandemic. And it's hilarious. And they shot it when everything was shut down. They got a group of friends and they did it. And so and they just got back from the Cannes Film Festival in France. It's been touring the country. It's been winning film festivals all over the country. It'll be in the LA Comedy Fest next week. And so it's just a great example of the fact that they funded it themselves. They made it themselves. And it's taken off like a rocket. So there's no question that start small, make a 2 minute film, make a 5 minute film, just grow and learn more, take a class, get around people who have that passion and that idea. And let me just say this real quick, Phil, passion isn't enough. I'm telling you something. I get screenplays from writers all the time that send in their screenplay to me and say, Phil, I'm just so passionate about writing. Well, the problem is they're terrible at it. They may be passionate, but they're terrible writers. Let me tell you, find out what you're wired to do. Not just what you're passionate about. Find out what God put you on the earth to accomplish. And if you figure that out, I tell the story in the book about how I spent almost 20 years pursuing something I was passionate about, but I eventually realized at the level I wanted to go, I was not capable of getting there. And once I switched gears and discovered what I was really wired to do, man, everything opened up for me. So don't be so caught up in what you're passionate in. Spend some time getting feedback from friends and other people and taking a hard look at what you're really good at doing, what you're really wired to do. What are you better than everybody else in? Once you figure that out, you'll be passionate. The passion will catch up. Trust me. but you'll be amazing at doing it. So I do a whole chapter in the book about passion isn't enough, because I think so many people get caught up in passion without really realizing, well, that may not be their greatest strength. And so figure out that strength, figure out what you're amazing at doing, then you'll get passionate about it pretty quick.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's so right. And enthusiasm is great, but you got to add skill to it and education and get some depth on that enthusiasm. The whole world of discipline and practice and rehearsal can seem difficult and onerous to the creative mind. They want to be spontaneous, so it just comes out of me. But like you say, it's terrible, because the passion might be there, but the skills of writing, you need to do writing courses and film courses and acting courses and get yourself educated in these areas. But then on the other hand, just doing that doesn't guarantee you a way forward either.
That's
right. I think it's a package. Let me talk to you about one other thing here, Phil, working like a team, because the idea of I'm in this on my own, I'm going to make this happen. Often I've seen people, they don't really reach their full potential or their dream because they tried to do it on their own, and they weren't prepared to share the dream or let others in on it. Maybe their pride or maybe their fear or ego just wanted to be the whole kit and caboodle. But a person as great as the Apostle Paul, when he was writing letters to churches, he was not doing it on his own. I mean, they're known as the letters of Paul, but they're not.
Yeah.
It's Timothy sends you greetings, Luke sends you greetings. We're all here in the cell together, and we're writing this letter together to you guys over there in Corinth. They're in such a mess, and I've gotten this report back from this guy, Epaphroditus, and this guy's turned up over here. We got some answers for you that we've been thinking through. And I think just to be able to be a creative community can help spark one another. We think better together. And I think we are better creatively together.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It was true in the days of the Apostle Paul, but it's 100 times more true today. I mean, we live in a world where, right. I mean, if you want to sit on your back porch and do watercolors, great. You can be by yourself, knock yourself out, have fun. But if you live in today's technologically driven, distracted culture, then you're going to need a team. When I make a movie, when I make a television program, you can't believe the number of people I need. I need camera operators, and I need assistants, and I need lighting people, and I need sound people, and I need writers. I need a whole team of people. And I can't do that by myself. So you're exactly right. One of the things I'm a big believer in is learning people skills. You know, learn how to get along with people, how to inspire people, how to motivate people. Phil, I actually believe that if you know people, if you can really inspire people, you'll never be out of a job. You'll have a job for the rest of your life, because there's always room for somebody who knows how to play well in the sandbox with other people. And so I just say, spend some time to learn people skills, how to get along with people, because you're exactly right. A team can do remarkable things. Now, there's some research that indicates that brainstorming, you know, doesn't always work. Whenever you get in a room with people trying to come up with ideas, sometimes there is a time to go in your office and shut the door and get to work by yourself and see what you can come up with. But there's no question that coming back together, contributing those ideas, sparking each other, being critical of each other in many ways. Will this work? Will that work? What about this? I'll tell you, doing that with a team is fantastic. I love the team that I've created. In fact, I've got a team that I so love working with. I'll take them all over the world to work on projects together. And you'll find that when you get to the upper levels of filmmaking, you'll find that people stick with their team. I was in Malta filming a documentary just probably 3 weeks ago. And while we were there at the hotel, I met the crew of Ridley Scott, who was working on a new epic movie about Napoleon. They're shooting a big movie in Malta about Napoleon. And I talked to the guy, and he said, oh, yeah, we've been with Ridley for 20 years. We've worked with Ridley for years and years, and we've traveled all over the world together. You find those people that you really connect with and that inspire you and motivate you. I'll tell you, that's a great experience, and you can come up with some amazing stuff. Because you're exactly right. It really does work.
I think everybody's creativity goes up levels. When you look in another person's eyes at a in a collaborative meeting where you're all buying into it, and you'll think of things that you wouldn't have thought of if they weren't in the room. And my experience leading teams, which I've been involved in for quite a while, is buy-in is so important. And so sometimes there's a cat that needs to be skinned, for want of a better term, and there's
yes.
different ways to do it.
Yeah,
you know, so
totally.
If the outcome is going to be the same, and I've got an idea and a member of my team has got an idea, I'll opt for theirs, because then they buy in. They say, whoa, my idea's got the seat. And so it doesn't matter. Strategy and methodology is of no consequence to me if we get the right outcome, if we're all going to get the same outcome.
Yes.
And so, you know, in a creative, and that becomes so important, because then they get enthusiastic about sharing. And if they do get knocked back on one point, at least they got one in. And it keeps the whole team alive and vibrant, and everybody gets energized. I know I do. I get so energized
yes.
when that team is thinking together, not arguing. Sometimes it is a conflict, but it's a conflict of common minds trying to get the best answer. And everybody feels that. And when you get that synergy, it's an energy, it's a harmony. It's the same thing I think the Beatles had when they were writing hit songs one after the other. It's a buzz. It's a feeling in the air. And like you say, good filmmakers ain't going to lose that team
that's right.
quickly at all, because they know that that's where the secret sauce is.
Well, one of the things I'm most excited about is teaching leaders how to lead creative people. You know, there's a lot of leadership stuff. I've spoken at a number of conferences with my friend John Maxwell, and I've been with you and other people. And it's interesting that there's a lot of great leadership material out there and resources and books, but there's not a lot of material on how to lead creative people. And so I actually have a section in my book, Ideas on a Deadline, about how to create a creative atmosphere, how to design a creative culture for your team. Then I do a chapter on how to lead high energy people, high achieving people. And if you can learn to lead creative teams, you can go anywhere. You can do remarkable, because you're exactly right. The best churches we've worked with, the best nonprofit organizations we've worked with, the best businesses have an incredibly energetic, excited, inspiring creative team. And so I think learning to be a leader of creative people is so important, so important. And if you can do that, yeah. It's really remarkable.
Yeah. So let's just dig into that a little bit further, because I am involved in leading a lot of pastors. And one of the more common comments is exactly that. How do I handle my creatives? Because creatives have become a very important part of church life, with worship teams, with visual arts teams, with camera teams. And yet there's this feeling like these are people who need a higher level of handling, if you want, for want of a better term. I don't believe it personally. I'm a creative myself, and I get it with people, but with who are creative. But I do find that leaders, they feel all thumbs and fingers when it comes to handling artistic style people. So talk a bit about that, Phil.
Sure. There's a dirty little secret out there with creative people, and that is we actually love deadlines. I don't even start working on a project until I see the deadline looming in the distance. I've talked to airline pilots who tell me once they start seeing the end of the runway coming up at them, they really get their blood pumping and they get excited and get really focused. I'm the same way. And so a lot of leaders think, okay, with my creative team, I'll just, you know, just encourage them and have them do it whenever they want. No. Creative people actually like deadlines because it gives us a boundary. We know when we have to research. We know when we have to work hard. We know when we have to deliver. So first of all, don't be afraid to give your creative team deadlines, because we really thrive on deadlines. It really helps us understand. Another thing I think is important is create stability. One of the great problems is creative people don't work well when they're nervous, when they're not sure if things will go well. In other words, if you tell your designer, look, if you don't come up with a great design, we're out of business. That's not the way to lead a creative person. They need stability on the job so they can be cut loose to be creative and amazing in their imagination. So threatening creative people doesn't work. Making them feel like everything's going to fall apart if they don't come through with the project, that doesn't work. You have to give them a certain sense of stability so they can be unleashed and do some amazing things. Another thing I think is important is make sure all your leaders are on the same page. Phil, you have no idea the number of times I've worked with a church, and I'll get a call from the pastor, and he'll say, okay, here's what we want to accomplish. Here's what we want to do, which is great. An hour later, I get a call from someone else on the staff saying, well, you know what the pastor told you? That's not exactly what we need. Let me tell you what we really need to do. Then the next day, I get a call from somebody else on the staff saying, well, you know what? Actually, none of that's true. Let me tell you what we really need to do. And so suddenly, I'm getting 3, 4, 5 directions from the leadership team. So if they're not on the same page, you know, nobody's going to be on the same page. So make sure your leaders are on the same page before you give your team a project. And one more thing I'd just say is understand the difference between, and this is really important, understand the difference between organizational structure and communication structure. And here's the key to that. I love organizational structure. We have to have an org chart, who reports to who, what department does what, all that's important. But when it comes to communication, we need to be much more free-flowing. If your designer, let's go back to the designer for a second. If your designer is working on a new logo and he has to go through 5 or 6 or 7 stages of approval before he can get to the pastor who actually signs off on it, that's ridiculous. That'll take forever. Plus, everybody's going to make him change some things. I'll tell you, creativity's got to be much more free-flowing. That designer, that writer, that video guy has got to have access to the top guy who's going to finally approve this thing. So organizational structure is great, but when it comes to creativity, we need to have access to the people that can make the decisions. We need to let that creative team reach out to people, communicate with people, whoever they need to make that job happen. Otherwise, it's just going to be chaotic and you're never going to really accomplish anything. So those are just a few of the tips that I think are really critical to leading creative teams.
So good, Phil. So good. Look, we're at the end of our time, but everybody get the book, Ideas with a Deadline, and how creative people are going to be able to summon that gift with a deadline and be able to put it within a time frame and bring out the best, bring out the absolute maximum potential of everybody's gift. And Phil, thanks for writing these books. And I know they're so helpful to so many people, including myself. And people can order this book on Amazon, I imagine?
Amazon, anywhere in Australia, Europe, America, anywhere in the world, you can order it online. So it's available everywhere. So I'd encourage people, it's Ideas on a Deadline, How to Be Creative When the Clock is Ticking.
Absolutely wonderful. Thanks, Phil. Been great talking with you. Look forward to our next time.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the C3 Church Global Podcast. Let us know what you thought by leaving a review and connect with us on Instagram @C3 Church Global. We hope you'll be back real soon.